There's one item that just isn't very clear, and that is how the Portland Bicycle Plan for 2030 is actually incorporated into the comprehensive plan and TSP. I don't think anybody's really quite clear on where those elements have wound up. So I would recommend that the staff provide some kind of a brief memo just indicating where the key elements from the bike plan actually are translated into the TSP comp plan. For the TSP funding assumptions, they're supposedly reasonably aggressive, but I think they're aggressively optimistic. It really seems to assume that there are a lot of planets at the star that are going to line up with funding coming from all different sources, resulting in 65% more funding than we have today for transportation projects. I don't really think that's going to be possible, given what you read in the news and everywhere else. And I think it misleads the public into believing that a lot of the projects that show up on the constrained list will actually have a chance of getting built in the next 20 years. I'd recommend basing a project scenario on existing funding levels and then have a second tier of priority projects that would come into play once we get additional funding, such as maybe a gas tax or something. I think that this needs to be a realistic plan. The constrained project list was based on the most expensive projects, not the most beneficial or the ones that were the highest planned priority. And again, you could look to the bike plan to see that the bike plan in Southwest Portland, a lot of times we went by the higher priority projects to focus on the more expensive ones. The project evaluation criteria, I think, are on the right track, but need some refinement, particularly because they try to fit one size to all kinds of situations. And I think that you can see that Southwest really hasn't come out very well on the constrained list. If you look at the map, there's a heavy concentration of projects on the east side, very light on the west side. And I think if you looked at the comprehensive plan policies and asked yourself, does the project list really support Southwest? The answer would be sort of. And I think that the city can do better than that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Leiden, just on that, the investment per capita in Southwest and the transportation projects in the TSP would actually be higher than in any other neighborhood. That's largely, of course, because of the increased cost necessary because of the topography. But I just wanted to be sure you're aware of that fact.
I am aware of that. I think this is the one big irony, that we had a number of big projects in Southwest that may or may not happen. And then when the project list was being developed, I, along with some others, are saying, well, don't keep looking at the most expensive project you can find and try and rate those in Southwest. Let's look at the ones that are less expensive. What's the matter with a project that's $300,000? Why do we only have to look at the ones that are over $500,000? So, and then when those expensive projects didn't make the cut into the constrained list, then there was nothing put in. So, for example, Humphrey Boulevard, I'll be quiet in just a second, but Humphrey Boulevard was on the list to be evaluated. It didn't make the cut because it's god-awful expensive. But then there's no substitute. Well, what about having Hewitt as a neighborhood greenway for a lot less money to make the same connection? That kind of thinking was lacking in the development of the project list. So it's not about the amount of money, it's how you spend it, and are we really getting the most out of it?
That's helpful. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. The concerns I have on the plan are really pertaining to the population growth and the housing supply. I'm not going to throw out the numbers on projections out 20 years because, I mean, let's face it, that can change drastically. What my biggest concern on is the housing supply, obviously, is coming up with the resources and the funding to basically build the housing. And one of the things I suggested to Commissioner Salzman is that I still want to have a bond placed on the ballot, and I'd like to have the bond somewhere around $100 million. And the reason why I say that is that we know that the gas prices have dropped considerably. We know that consumers are basically saving money with that. We also know by studies that they're actually spending a lot of that money at retail department stores, and that's at the highest list. And there are averages there from probably, say, $500 to $1,500 in savings over time. And now is the time to go for the bond. People know that we need affordable housing. People know we need the resources. And why not try to do it? Why not at least try to do it? Another thing I want to focus on is the employers offering assisted housing. I want more of the corporations to begin to understand that we need you to start funding development projects for affordable housing. It is imperative that you do. If you want the skilled labor force to come into Portland, you also have to fund affordable housing. And it's just on a voluntary basis, and see if they can work with certain developers and fund them money on certain projects that are proposed to the larger corporations. It needs to be set up in that understanding. If we want to have that skilled labor force, the family wage jobs, and the affordable housing, they have to step up also and offer that type of funding to these developers, which will be loans paid back to them, but the benefits throughout the community and to their corporations will be tremendous. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Next three are Jim Labenthal, John Loff, and Terry Dublinsky Milton. That's 45, 46, and 47. And they'll be followed by Kate Kuth, L. Sheldon, and Gabe Hendrick, 48, 49, 50.
Okay, I'd like to be first. Go ahead, Jim.
Good evening. Jim Labenthal, and I'm representing the Riverside Golf Course, and we had submitted a letter earlier. And I wanted to just kind of amplify a few points that we made in the letter from our president of our board and our general manager. As an overall perspective, we're operating quite healthily right now and quite successfully. We've been around for 90 years. We plan to be around for another 90 years. We have over 500 members, close to 100 employees, a third of which are youth and summer jobs and after-school jobs helping out at the course. So we do not want to, we don't want to upzone our property. We actually want to maintain open space on the site. We've had quite a discussion with our board about this. What is our core mission? Is it to operate a golf course, or is it to convert to industrial? And our core mission is really to continue to operate a golf course. Our concern is that this designation makes it harder for us to operate by limiting our, making the question about whether we're going to be around come up to play. So we're recruiting to new members. We're competing with other clubs. We're also hosting weddings, golf tournaments, and other social functions. People plan far ahead for this. So already we've heard a few rumors from even some of our own members. Oh, here we're converting to industrial. And I have to explain, well, no, not exactly. So we really would encourage you to not count us in the industrial inventory, because I don't think it's a realistic goal for this, for the plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is John Loff, and I'm here representing the employees of Riverside Golf and Country Club. I'm here today to express our concern over the proposed changes to the comprehensive plan and how this could have a negative impact on Riverside's future success and our jobs that we rely on. The staff of Riverside has worked very hard the last 7 years to make it through some rather tough economic times. And we see a real bright future in our ahead of us. So we all want to work real hard towards that success. We have a healthy membership. We have a great group of employees who don't ever see Riverside turning into an industrial park. And we're going to work hard to make sure that doesn't happen. We ask that you reconsider any changes to our current designation as open space. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, I'm Terry Dublinsky Milton. I am the Transportation Land Use Chair for the North Tabor Neighborhood Association, and I am speaking for the Neighborhood Association. I first would like to thank Council for all the work you've done on the comprehensive plan and your recent votes on Vision Zero, fossil fuels, oil trains, and the Greenway Report, all which symbolically represent votes that we have taken. Very good. One issue on the greenways and transportation, we're worried about the silo effect. We're the only neighborhood without a built park, or we don't even have a playground. All the schools are in other neighborhoods. And so when we ask for diversion in our greenways, it's because we want to turn it into a linear park system over time. The diversion is the first step. It's not just about numbers. Okay. Next concept, I'd like to thank the Portland Sustainability Commission for giving us our neighborhood town center. We requested an upzoning for a town center because of the Providence, because of the MAX station, because of our bus lines and bike access. We have excellent access for workforce housing. We have been an affordable workforce node for the working class for 100 years. We want to keep that. On that subject, when we get inclusionary zoning, and we would like you to continue to lobby for that, there are five blocks between 53rd and 58th on Gleason, between Providence and the off-ramp, that we would like zoned to CM3. We could go up to as tall as 100 feet. This plan was developed over a consensus model over multiple meetings. So you can read through it in more detail. We're talking about ADUs, limiting, opening up flexibility, building onto existing structures. Specifically on ADUs, we talked for a very long time about building it in the setbacks on the corners because we have properties that have driveways that butt up. And so we would really hope that you pull your amendment because that we have hundreds of properties we could put ADUs up in the corners in the back driveway that are visible from the street. We are more worried about displacement than we are density. So we would like you to vote yes on all the displacement measures, and please read our report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Will.
The next three are 48, 49, and 50, Kate Kuth, L. Sheldon, and Gabe Hedrick. And they'll be followed by Annette Stanhope, Linda Peel, and Heather Flint Chateau, 61, 62, and 63.
Okay, why don't you go ahead while he's getting settled?
I'd be happy to. Thank you very much. My name is L. Sheldon. I've lived in Portland for over 40 years, and I've lived in my home in Northeast Portland, which was built in 1911, for almost 32 years. In my professional marketing career in Portland, I've worked for several organizations, and my work has had long-term economic impacts on this community that we relish today. In the 1990s, I was appointed to the Oregon Film and Video Foundation as a volunteer, and served as its president for 10 years. This is the organization that purchased and preserved a one-of-a-kind community asset, the Hollywood Theater, which will celebrate its 90th anniversary this July. I've been a member of Riverside Golf and Country Club since 1993. This community asset is also celebrating its 90th anniversary this year. Riverside has survived fires, depressions and recessions, a foreclosure, World War II, the Great Flood of 1948 when it was under 10 feet of water, and the Columbus Day storm. Its dedicated members have kept this club alive for 90 years. We have developed and created a nationally renowned golf course and environment which has hosted local, regional, and national golf tournaments and events for 9 decades. The proposed designation of the proposed change of designation of Riverside will severely impact the club's ability to market Riverside to potential members and to others wishing to use the club as a site for their events. Since Riverside was founded, it has proffered Portland and a golfing and social community that is unique and unsurpassed. Riverside is a very valuable, relevant, and irreplaceable asset to Northeast Portland and the entire region. I strongly oppose the designation change. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Gabe Hedrick, and I live in the Reed neighborhood. I was a former president of the Reed Neighborhood Association for 2 years, and I was the land use chair for another 3 years. I'm not currently on the board, but I'm here on their behalf. I just got a vote speaking for them last week. I'm actually happy to be here to provide and submit testimony of our support of the proposed zoning changes that the Planning Department has put forth in their new report, which involves maintaining the R7 zone in the Reedwood portion of the neighborhood and expanding it, as well as maintaining the R7 zone in the Reed College Heights neighborhood as well. We started in... Both myself personally, I've also been on the policy expert group for the comprehensive plan. So as a neighborhood and personally, we've been very active in this process and really pleased to see the results thus far and really hope that you can approve those results as well that the planning has put forth. We started in 2010, the Reed Neighborhood Association started in 2010, working with Planning Department to advocate for some changes. We submitted a 2011 letter from a vote that we had in the RNA, the Reed Neighborhood Association, in favor of those changes. Again, in 2013, we submitted a petition that had 137 signatures from homeowners in the area. And I've also got a letter, again, from the current board supporting the changes still. So I really appreciate the Planning Department's work, particularly Matt Wickstrom and Marty Stockton have been really great to work with, and I really hope that you'll approve their recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.
The next three are Annette Stanhope, Linda Peel, and Heather Flint Chatto. And they'll be followed by 64, 65, and 66, Robin McIntosh, Deborah Hockhalter, and Barry Smith.
Good afternoon. Go ahead, if you may.
Dear Mayor and City Council members, thank you so much for all of your hard work, and also to staff, and particularly Barry Manning, Bill Cunningham, and Marty Stockton, our Southeast Neighborhood liaison. I'm here representing. What's that?
Put your name in the record, Heather.
Oh, yes, my name is Heather Flynn Chatto. I'm an urban planner and urban designer, and I'm also a Richmond board member and on the Division Design Committee. I'm here on behalf of the Division Design Initiative. And we're here submitting our top 10 recommendations for the City of Portland. I've given your assistants some of our copies so that you can take a look at those as well. And this represents more than 18 months of work engaging neighborhoods around issues of design. And so I wanted to let you know that these top 10 policy recommendations are in response to issues and concerns we've heard both from the Division neighborhood as well as issues we've heard citywide over the last 2 years. These top 10 policy recommendations have been endorsed by the Division Clinton Business Association, by the Richmond Neighborhood Association, Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association, and the Hawthorne Boulevard Business Association as well. And they are really in response to extensive community outreach, research, and stakeholder engagement during this time to create proactive approaches to engage neighborhood members and in the planning and design of their own neighborhoods rather than feeling kind of disenfranchised in the processes, which we've kind of seen. The redevelopment of Southeast Division can be viewed as a pilot effort or a prototype of what's being proposed in the comprehensive plan. Although the changes have brought benefits, our experience during the past 3 years of growth and change has led us to some significant concerns that feel unaddressed currently. These include a reduction in safety on adjacent neighborhood streets due to increased traffic, speeds and volumes, and increased congestion on Division and Powell, new development that creates discontinuity with existing neighborhood patterns, style, materials, and building form, dramatic neighborhood socioeconomic changes, gentrification, and increasing lack of affordability of housing and loss or lack of neighborhood-serving businesses, lack of adequate design standards and planning design review criteria to ensure compatibility, lack of information, notification, and meaningful ability to participate in the planning and design review process. We would ask that you not accept the growth scenarios report without further analysis of some other alternatives for increasing infill density with fewer development impacts, such as higher density on wider streets, north-south corridors where you have less shading impacts and on major arterials, as well as high density at major intersection nodes to balance reductions for narrower streets and older streetcar era main streets with special character that could actually have a little bit more preservation. We'd also ask that you evaluate a more comprehensive missing middle neighborhood infill scenario.
Time is actually up.
Oh, okay.
It's bouncing up now. Thank you.
And I just want to say the last key issue that is our top recommendation from our planning consultant, who was a former planning commissioner, is to close the residential floor area ratio code loophole. That is the most important issue that you could do right now instead of waiting until 2017 to fix incompatible development with our neighborhoods. Thank you so much. I would welcome an opportunity to tell you more about our
project. We really appreciate you putting this really detailed set of recommendations together, so that's very helpful to us.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
And those are overarching recommendations, which we'd be happy to share more detailed recommendations as well.
Oh, yeah, please keep it coming. This
Absolutely.
Is very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for having me. I'm especially excited that you made it to number 62. So good job. I'm a physician. I canceled my 15 patients this afternoon to come at 2 o'clock, and I was so hoping to speak. I'll be short and try to be brief. My name is Linda Peel, and I live on 14th and Clinton in Southeast Portland. And I'm representing a large group of 50 neighbors that are, this testimony is due to support of the current comp plan recommendations to keep the property at 2717 Southeast 15th Street at Clinton Residential. I represent a large group of neighbors living in this community, and we understand that the property owner has come to you to ask for a change in the zoning of his property, which is currently listed in the current draft of the comprehensive plan as residential. After hearing the requests and testimony of neighbors back in 2014, the decision was made to keep his property residential. We agree and support this decision at this exact moment. It is listed as residential. We strongly urge you to stay with the same and oppose his personal request for the rezoning of his property. Currently have a stable, healthy residential area with plenty of mixed use and commercial properties. Actually, there are more than 25 businesses within a half mile of this location and new businesses opening daily. Rezoning 2717 Southeast 15th from residential to commercial will add additional businesses, noise, and chaos to inner Southeast Clinton Street. It is simply not needed. It will increase noise, traffic, parking difficulties, exposure to environmental hazards. It's the second largest bike pathway in the city and just 3 blocks from our local elementary school, so there could be some concerns for families and on bicycles and people walking by. Our property owner developer has spent a lot of time and effort and money to promise everyone that none of this will happen. He has met with our hand neighborhood board 5 times over the past year. Thankfully, the hand board did ask him to notify the neighbors that this was happening, and that's how we were made aware of this in September of 2015. And the hand board has written a general letter in oppose of any property going from residential to commercial if it hasn't always been residential in the past. So, and finally, I just want you to listen kindly to his request, but base your decision on the zoning and not on the property owner. I want to be clear that we're not attacking his character in any way or his attempt to make money on his property. We are supportive of small business. He may be Mother Teresa himself with the best of intentions, but once a zone change is made, it's permanent, and anything can happen for years and years to come with this property owner or future owners. As neighbors with long-term investments in our homes and our families and our visions for this great community, we cannot take this chance. So we agree with the current zoning and oppose any change to this particular property. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next three are Robin McIntosh, Deborah Hawkhalter, and Barry Smith, 5064, 65, and 66, and they'll be followed by John Rush, Joshua Kingsley, and Chris Durth, 67, 68, and 69.
Okay, those folks are here, come on up. Go ahead, please. Whoever would like to be first.
Hi, my name is Robin McIntosh. I live at 3605 Southeast Carruthers. Today, I offer testimony about plans for 2 blocks of Southeast Carruthers between 35th Place and 38th. This is a small residential street 1 block north of Division, filled mostly with single-family homes, but also with 1 large mixed-use apartment building, 1 parking lot, and plans underway for 1 more apartment building with retail space on the ground floor. Carruthers is the wrong place for commercial development. The comp plan proposes commercial development on the entire south side of 1 block of this narrow street. Sorry, I'm really nervous. Okay. Public speaking, no. As well as on 38th and part of my block of Carruthers, which is a dead end. Increased density and development on Division has brought more delivery trucks, more moving trucks, garbage trucks, maintenance vehicles, and cars to Carruthers 37th and 38th, adding to the congestion in this already congested area. Delivery vehicles parked on Division decrease visibility for drivers and bikers turning onto Division from 37th and for pedestrians crossing the street. This dangerous bottleneck will become even worse if Carruthers becomes a street with businesses on it that will need to be serviced by more large, loud vehicles, which will all need to turn onto Division after parking or double parking on Carruthers. Carruthers currently serves as a buffer between the business district on Division and the surrounding neighborhood, but this function will be lost if the commercial development is also built on Carruthers. Carruthers, Division, and the other streets in the surrounding neighborhood cannot get wider to support the increased traffic and congestion. Further development on Carruthers will create a terrible mess that will negatively affect everyone. Please prevent this from happening by changing the comp plan zoning to residential zoning.
But is it currently residential?
Most of it is.
But is the zoning currently residential?
The comp plan, yes. Yeah, it's mostly R5.
And is it proposed for commercial on both sides of Carruthers?
No, it's proposed. Well, there's some grandfathered in commercial already. Okay, that's see storefront commercial. It's proposed to be R2.5 on the north side, and
mixed use on the south side.
Mixed use, yeah, and we will have some commercial in there because of the grandfathered in. I mean, we already have Richmond Flats there, and that developer is going to put another apartment building there across the street, which will be 30 units, so he doesn't have to build parking. So, and the parking lot that we have is also subject to become an apartment building, but right now it's kind of a nice, you know, valve there because of all the added cars. At least there's a parking lot there.
Right.
So, yeah, and I've seen Richmond Flats is kind of the poster child of the development that we all hate in the neighborhood. So I don't want to see the same thing happen on the rest of Carruthers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hi, my name is Debbie Hochalter, and I'm a member of the Division Design Initiative Committee, elected as a representative of the Richmond Neighborhood Association, but I'm just here as a resident. I've lived in the Division Hawthorne neighborhood, Richmond neighborhood technically, for almost 22 years in a single-family home built in 1910. I would begin by requesting that you endorse the 10 policy recommendations proposed by the DDI. Second, I would encourage you to analyze the many ways Portland is displacing the working class or missing middle, if you will, in the name of increased density. As Heather Flint Chatto and I wrote in a letter to you in 2012, we're at this for a long time, we appreciate and understand the need for density to protect the urban growth boundary. However, not all density is good quality density. Without thought to compatibility with surrounding structures, impact on infrastructure, and yes, parking, a lack of sensitivity to the unique identity and quality of neighbors and neighborhoods, I fear that we are losing the many attributes that make a great city a livable city. We can do better than building square boxes, which do not exist in nature, tearing down mature, healthy trees and mature, healthy houses, all in the name of increased density. I ask that you work toward diversifying development and endorse the policy recommendations set forth by the Division Design Initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next three are John Rush, Joshua Kingsley, and Chris Durth. And they'll be followed by Alistair Roxburgh, Deb Delman, and Rob Mathers. That's 70, 71, and 72 will be next.
Good evening. My name is John Rush. I'm a resident in the Sylvan Highlands neighborhood, and I'm here kind of under unusual circumstances. We've heard that there would be a proposal put before you about rezoning a nearby property. I'm here to provide my opposition, and as the Sylvan Highlands board member, also encourage and let you know that we support the findings of the comprehensive plan, which keep this property zoned R20 the way it is currently. So the property we're talking about is 6141 Southwest Canyon Court. We believe that the owner intends to make a proposal to change the zoning from R20 to R2 multifamily and develop 24 condominium units there. The reasons that I personally not just the board, but me personally, believe this is not a good idea. One, it's inconsistent with a recommended comprehensive plan. The owner of this property actually went through the comprehensive planning process, went with this very specific proposal, and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability denied it for the following reasons. This is not a site in a proposed corridor or center, and transit options are limited. Although there are some commercial services within a quarter mile, the transportation infrastructure is congested. Any changes merit consider of a broader, more cohesive area. So this is consistent with feedback from the neighbors around the impact of this development on neighborhood infrastructure. We have very limited street infrastructure. Southwest Canyon Court is a two-lane road that serves about 800 residents to the west in Washington County. Further to that, there's a significant development that's going to impact that very same spot. A 244-unit apartment complex has been approved by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability a quarter mile to the west that will impact exactly that same intersection. The main area that allows ingress and egress from the neighborhood goes past East Sylvan School, which is going to come back into service as a school this year. And the 300 more cars going up and down that road every day, and if you add on another 25 apartment units or condominium units, it's going to make it even worse.
So you're content with the map as it's now proposed?
We support the comprehensive plan broadly and specifically. Yeah. In summary, we strongly oppose the request to rezone the property located at 6141 Southwest Canyon Court because the proposal was thoughtfully considered during the comprehensive planning process and was denied. The increased density proposed would worsen an already challenging traffic situation, negatively impact neighborhood safety and livability, and provide no offsetting benefits to the impacted neighborhood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor and commissioners, good evening. My name is Chris Dirth, and I've lived in the Multnomah neighborhood for almost 25 years now. And first, Mayor, I'd like to thank you for opening the Armory in Multnomah to a homeless shelter. We really welcome your political courage in doing that. On the comp plan, I'd like to talk about my views, which differ from many of those who you heard earlier this evening. I'm sorry you had to hear so much negativity and NIMBYism from our neighborhood association. But in contrast, I'd like to bring some positive support for the progressive comp plan draft that you have before you tonight. When we moved to Multnomah in the early 90s, the village was in poor condition with many storefronts vacant, run down, and underutilized. Over the years, we've seen a steady increase in commercial vitality, which I attribute to a steady increase in density in the neighborhood, bringing more customers to the area and, in turn, supporting more small businesses and the restaurants that we love. We love Multnomah because it's a thriving urban neighborhood center with increasing density supporting more urban services. In fact, it's always been a neighborhood center from the early days as a small rural town to today when it remains one of the few commercial centers in Southwest. It's ironic to me that the very density which has made our neighborhood more vital, more walkable, and more livable has been opposed by a small number of people who seem to dominate the Multnomah Neighborhood Association. It's also ironic that while we all want less car dependency and greater walkability, many still oppose the density necessary to make that a reality. We also say that we want better transit service, but some still oppose the density necessary to support it. And we all say that we want to retain the urban growth boundary, yet some don't even want to absorb our small share of Portland's growth. And we all say that we want more restaurants, a grocery store, and more small businesses, all within a short walk, yet many oppose the additional customers necessary to support those businesses. So in conclusion, I respectfully request that the council approve the draft comp plan retaining Multnomah Village as a neighborhood center as it is, and retain the CM2 designation to avoid downsizing in the center. Please allow Multnomah to grow and thrive by not moving us backward and not downzoning and moving to less density. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Chris.
Mr. Dirth, I want you to know that Rachel and I recognize that we still owe you a pie.
I'll collect on that anytime. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Next three are Alistair Roxburg, Deb Delman, and Rob Mathers, 70, 71, and 72. Let's go with Laura Campos, Colin Rowan, and Ellen Gentry. Maybe we should find out who's here and wants to testify.
Yes, come on
Joe
down.
Rossi. You want to testify?
Okay.
Oh, he just listened.
All right.
So who else wants to talk?
Anyone else that wants to testify tonight?
I would like to.
Come on up.
Come on down.
We'll get you in.
I'll be quick.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes,
my name is Thomas Hermack, and I'm appearing before you today to oppose the comprehensive plan zone change proposed for my home at 10901 Southwest Boones Ferry Road. It's been zoned R10 since I purchased it on April 2nd, 1992. The proposed change would be to R20, which I find rather incredulous. I think it's obvious that 20,000 square foot lots are excessively large and should only be mandated in extreme circumstances. Any related health and safety issues would obviously apply to either zoning designation. Here's a quote from the proposed change, single dwelling 20,000. This designation is intended for areas that are generally far from centers and corridors where urban public services are extremely limited or absent. And future investments in urban public services will be limited. Areas within the designation generally have multiple significant development constraints that may pose health and safety risks if the land were more densely developed. Very low density single dwelling residential and agriculture will be the primary uses. The maximum density is generally 2.2 units per acre. Corresponding zone is R20. This in no way describes my situation. 10,000 square foot lots are very large lots. Lowering the allowable density would not only be unjustified, but would directly violate the goal of directing future growth inside the urban growth boundary. I support the goal of directing new growth inside the urban growth boundary, and I urge you to resist any proposals that run counter to that goal. While I appreciate very much the semi-rural nature of my neighborhood, I do not subscribe to the not-in-my-backyard way of thinking. There's a lot of development opportunity in my neighborhood that can be utilized without destroying the character and resources of the neighborhood. Mine is the only property singled out on the west side of Boones Ferry Road that's included in the proposed change number 177. None of the adjoining properties are affected. I've tried to find out what factors specific to my property caused it to be flagged for the change, but have been given only general guidelines, none specific to my lot. And who inspected my property and came up with a recommendation that it be included and why? I haven't found an answer to that.
We'll find out. We appreciate you flagging it for us.
Could you give us the address again, please?
10901 Southwest Boones Ferry Road. Okay. I also own an adjoining lot and have an order of council allowing me to apply the comp plan R10 overlay to it, which would make the entire plot that I own R10. It was the result of a Measure 37 and then Measure 49 claim back in 2008, I think.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Very much.
Appreciate you flagging this.
You got that clearly on the record. We can look into it.
Okay.
Thank you.
The proposed change would result in a split zoning situation. I'm 67 years old, and the value of my home represents the vast majority of my net worth. There's no doubt that the proposed
change...
Excuse
me, if you could submit the rest of it in writing so that we can get everybody else in.
Thank you very much for your time.
You've got it clearly in front of us. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Ken Diener. I live at 536 Southeast 17th Avenue in the Buckman neighborhood. I'm here to talk about proposed change number 348. It is the only spot zone proposed in the corridor study in the comp plan here, and at least within the Buckman neighborhood and along the corridors of the southeast side. For some reason, the planners have identified a 5.5 block area adjacent to Buckman School on Stark that is over a block away from the corridor of the Belmont-Morrison corridor. It's existing now at R5, and they're proposing to change it to R2.5.
What are the cross streets again?
Between 16th and 18th, 16th and 19th, and between Stark and Alder. It's a little yellow rectangle that you see there. Very weird little lines that sort of go back and forth. One was to avoid the neighborhood chairman who lives in the block just outside of this new proposed line, and she was very specifically was against this proposal and has spoken with the planner and requested this proposed density increase not to happen. My house is right there in the corner being rezoned without any input from me at all. And my position is that the most sustainable, the least gentrifiable position is the existing housing stock. The existing historic homes are the most sustainable. This is energy. This is material. This is building construction that happened. My house was built in 1902. If you put development pressure by, whatever you want to call it, upzoning, downzoning the density, increasing the density on these houses, you're putting pressure for these homeowners to sell. You're adding value to the sale of these existing homes, which means new townhouses, more parking on the street, and much less sustainable neighborhood. So I'm definitely going to be in contact with the plant with Marty Stockton. My neighbors that I've heard are against it have not been heard. And so I'm here to talk to you now about it and put a stop to the change from R5 to R2.5.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very much. Appreciate it. Okay, do we have any others who want to speak tonight? Come on up. We'll try to get everybody in before we close down.
Come up. If you want to speak, come up and sit in the front chair so we know.
Yeah. Anybody else that wants to speak, just sit on the on-deck row there and okay, Susan, welcome.
Hi, I'm Susan Pierce. I'm chair of Hosford Abernathy Neighborhood District Association, or HAND, and I'm speaking for the HAND board. I'd like to advocate for two issues. The HAND board advocates for comp plan and city code changes that would address certain older residential buildings because the surrounding area has been rezoned over the years. Those buildings now have a non-conforming status. You've heard me on this before. And it piggybacks on what the gentleman just before me said. This affects their owners, the non-conforming status affects their owners' ability to obtain funding for any major improvements or repairs. Our concerns apply to several homes shared by HAND and the Central East Side Industrial District, as well as some that are just outside the CEID, east of 12th, south of Clinton. They are among HAND's most affordable homes. Our valuable historic stock are at risk of falling into disrepair, and as the gentleman before me just said, that is the most sustainable form of maintaining buildings, and we don't want to lose them. So we're hoping for some support for protection for them. We also wish to express, new subject, it's our strong support for policies related to the identification and preservation of scenic resources or view corridors, both Chapter 4, Design and Development, and Chapter 9, Transportation, include policies that encourage the recognition, enhancement, and protection of public views and significant scenic resources as designated in the Scenic Resources Inventory. We understand that it is the inventory of public view corridors hasn't been updated since the late 1980s and currently includes only one scenic resource on the east side that is east of Southeast 12. Given the rapid pace of development currently occurring along inner east side corridors, opportunities to preserve such views are likely to be lost if action isn't taken in the near future. Shall I stop?
Why don't you just get us the rest?
Finish my paragraph.
Yeah.
None of the important policies, there's a list and I wasn't planning to, it will be part of a letter that will encompass all we're saying. None can be implemented if the city does not take action to update the Scenic Resources Inventory in the near future. We assume when such an update is carried out, it will attempt to engage a diverse representation. We like that. of community members to assist in identifying views and features of importance. However, the comp plan does not explicitly refer to the multicultural nature of our history and nature of our city and its history in this instance.
Yeah, no, do get us that as a letter as well, Susan, please.
And that will be coming. We have more to tell you. And
okay. Bring it on. Thank you.
And we support the Division Design Initiative, by the way.
Yeah, they did a great job.
That will be in the letter.
Thank you. Okay.
My name is Phil Brown, and I'm here representing myself and my wife, who are owners of two properties on Southwest Main Street. And there are two other properties, two other houses on that street as well, facing south. And the proposal under the comp plan is to change that to R2.
Southwest Main and what?
Southwest Main between St. Clair and King. Okay. And we bought these houses 43 years ago at a time when some of these old houses were being torn down or were in very serious disrepair. And everybody on our side of the block there, the south side of the block, was able to get a revocable permit from the city so that we could rent those houses out for professional office use. And that, in fact, is what saved those houses, I'm convinced, from the wrecking ball. There were other houses that I recall in that neighborhood that are no longer there that were beautiful, fine houses, and it's too bad they couldn't have been saved, but these were. But now under R2, I'm not clear on how the zoning law works in this particular matter or in many ways, but I'm understanding that the revocable use permit will disappear. And so if that's true, it'll be, and if it goes to R2 or if it stays at R5, we'll wind up with four empty houses on that street because we'll no longer have the permit to rent them to professionals. We have abided by all the rules. There are no commercial signs. You can't tell when you drive by. It's a beautiful neighborhood and street. It's the western entrance to the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association. And I, for example, am a CPA. I have a firm that occupies all of one of our houses. It's 2177 Southwest Main. Our other house there, 2187, is rented to other professionals. There are two houses, 2153, I think it is, and 2165, to the east of us, and they're totally occupied by professionals, I think accountants and others.
Thank you for flagging this, and we'll, one, find out what happens to the non-conforming use situation there, but to appreciate you flagging those particular properties. You're right, those are great old buildings. So thank you very much. So
okay, we very much would like to see them preserved. But we can't do it unless we can get revenue from the buildings.
We get it. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jennifer Gomersall, and I'm talking about the same exact properties. I, too, would like the zoning to stay the same at R5, not to be zoned to R2. I think that... also, the Neighborhood Association, I think you've received a letter and are going to receive another letter that they're strongly opposed to the zoning change. And learning from the Multnomah Group, I think we're going to get a big petition going, too, so it's real clear.
You don't need to do that.
Fair enough.
If you're in touch with the Neighborhood Association and
absolutely,
then that's important. So.
And I believe that if you truly consider what was the opening of this meeting, you all would be opposed to this as well. These four houses, I mean, I had something written, I'm not as succinct because I realize as hearing what everyone else has wanted, these four houses give you a bonanza of benefits. You could pretty much hit what everyone asked for with these four houses. They provide the employment, they're walkable, they're beautiful, they're historic,
And one thing, talking with the underrepresented folks out there, we realize they also represent that because those houses, because of the old style of houses, they have small rooms, and they lend themselves really well to renting rooms because they're not these open plan houses. And in that neighborhood, the 20-somethings that cannot afford to live downtown right now are living either with their parents or their friends' parents. And if you start to really look at the density of some of those houses, you'll find that there's 3, 4, 5 20-somethings living there. There might be some lower-income people maybe in the basement or something temporary until they can get on. So it kind of hits that notch as well as all the other notches. So I wanted you to consider that as well as the green space people. The only thing we don't hit is the streetlights because we have the other streetlights, so I can't make her happy. But pretty much every single one I was ticking off. But I think the biggest thing and the thing that will make you guys happy is if you leave it R5 and not switch it to R2, you get rid of the planning staff vexation problem when they have to be, can they do this, can't they do this? The fact is, if it's R5 and it is what the property owners want, all that goes away. The minute it's R2 and then they want to put up the skinny houses and then can they do it and then the scenic zone, then the overlay, then you get into all this mess. If it's left as is, we're all happy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we have 3 people left that are patient. Maybe 4 if we count Susan, and we will. So come on up.
Doesn't matter.
All right. Good evening.
Good evening.
Please.
My name is Bob Folio, and I'm here to talk about the new comprehensive plan map change to the institutional campus. And nobody's brought that up. I assume you're all familiar with it.
Which area are you particularly concerned about?
This one's near Concordia College. Mm-hmm. And I read through the amendment, and all in all, it's a fabulous, brilliant plan. Takes most of the density transfers it to the middle, so you have more compatible neighborhoods. But the one oversight, and I do believe it's an oversight, is there are several of us that own small parcels that are zoned commercial, CN1, CN20, and it takes away our ability to develop those parcels, be it floor area ratio, landscape setbacks, etc. So I've gone through the 15 sites, and it appears there's a handful of properties, not a bunch, that have incorporated in their overlays residences and small commercial.
that are not owned by the colleges?
They're not owned by the college. So therein lies the problem. The problem isn't the plan. I mean, I believe they need to be expedited, jobs, education, income. That's priority one to make this world go round. And I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. I just think there's been a couple things overlooked. So I would have brought it up sooner.
Yeah.
However,
if you could, you can do it later. Just email us the specific addresses that you're concerned about.
Certainly.
If you would, that'd be great, because get that into the record, and that gives us the chance to go back and check.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Mark Jordan, and I live at 1125 Southwest St. Clair, and I'm talking about the Main Street issue that the two prior people mm-hmm. talked about. And to put that in context, it's this small one little half, rezoning one half of one block in the middle of the historic district. And in talking with the Planning Commission, ostensibly the reason for this is because of the conditional use waiver
right.
that they have. They want to simplify that. To me, the solution of taking it to R2 seems like an odd way to do that, because that conditional use permits, they've been there for 40 years in order to preserve those nice old homes and that beautiful scenic entryway to the park. That is the primary way to go to the park. And those houses are set back farther than even the R5 designation requires, which adds that sort of stately entrance to the park. The neighborhood has done its bit and continues to do its bit to support density. As you know, there's some massive apartment complexes on Kings Hill. So it's not like we're scofflaws on trying to support density. But to change these to R2 from R5, if the conditional waiver is not reissued under the R2 designation, then the development pressure, those houses are worth more to developers to put in skinny houses there than they are to the people who own them. And the irony is, right after they've been saved for this long, conceivably, if for some reason the city, and I have to say the entire community, is in favor of allowing the offices to continue because they're very good neighbors and it's completely you cannot tell that they're not residences the way they're managed. They're beautifully managed. But if they were changed to R2 and developers come in, it's hard for them to resist that because of the economics. So now let's say that the reason that people are doing this because of the reason they're choosing to go to R2 is to add a little bit more density. All you're allowing is to add 4 additional million-dollar-plus homes, which is not the crying need for the city, in a way that's going to make those fit, they're going to have to be closer. And you're undoing what is the reason for adding density, which is to maximize transit. Right now, there's numerous offices in there, people coming and going, using transit to get there. You're going to replace 20 or 30 people who are using transit to get there with...
Yeah. We got it.
4 people.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
You're making sense. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mike Connors, and I'm here on behalf of Hayden Island Enterprises, who own and operate the Hayden Island Manufactured Home Community. As you may know, that's the largest manufactured home park in the city of Portland. It's a vital, affordable housing resource, which you've heard plenty of, not only in this hearing and others, is an important issue before the city. We're here with, along with our written comments, to make 2 comments or requests. The first one is we request that you postpone making a decision on the comprehensive plan amendments until you have the mixed-use zoning project amendments before you. We believe that the two are so interrelated that you should be considering and deciding them concurrently rather than separately. The second issue is we're requesting that you incorporate, as policy language in the comprehensive plan amendment, some previously recognized nonconforming use protections that the city has determined informally apply to our park. The park was built before the current development standards are in place. It's a nonconforming development. And as you know, whenever there's a alteration, it triggers a question as to whether you're required to come into conformance with the current standards. In a typical development situation, that makes more sense. But in a manufactured home park, when you can have homes, or you could have RVs, we have 440 manufactured home spaces, 169 RV site spaces. When there's a change in ownership there, it raises a question as to whether that triggers a requirement, which if that were the case, would devastate the park. It would make it very difficult. We've included with our comments a 1999 determination, which my client requested of Bureau of Development Services. It was a letter from the city attorney recognizing our interpretation of the nonconforming use provisions and as they apply in our unique situation. In 2009, when the city was going through its Hayden Island plan and actually proposed to downzone my client's property from commercial to residential, my client agreed to go along with that. But we're requesting that some of these protections or exceptions to the typical standards be recognized. And so we're asking that you implement that as part of this update because we think that this is an appropriate process in which to incorporate that kind of language.
Yeah, perhaps we could just add language specifically on manufactured home parks.
That would be great. It doesn't have to be specific to us. And the only thing we would request is that we raise this issue at the Planning and Sustainability Commission level. And understandably, there's so many issues out there, it sort of got overlooked. If you could direct staff to have some further conversations, we can work on specific language, at least our proposal, and have something more specific for you to consider.
I'm very interested in that, Mayor.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Thank you.
Good point. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
We're going to give Susan Lindsay the last word on this hearing, unless there's anybody else hovering.
No, I got to go.
What an honor.
Susan and one friend. Okay.
It's kind of hard to do standing, but I guess I can do it.
Why is that then?
Well, that's a what's that called? A HIPAA regulation. Hi, I'm Susan Lindsay, 625 Southeast 17th Avenue, co-chair of the Buckman Community Association. I'll be speaking briefly about as co-chair of the Buckman Community Association and then briefly as myself. Okay. So 2 issues. One that I did submit a letter to all of you about and that we did to the Planning Commission that the board unanimously was raised a big red flag concern about the proposed upzoning of the area on Southeast Belmont and Southeast Morrison between 15th and 19th. That's an area that's a mix of turn-of-the-century homes, that many of which are used for affordable housing, and as well as some nonconforming use, which are zoned, underlying zoning of R1. We absolutely do.